This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalbank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Today I'm here with Tim O'Brien and our very first Job Bite, which is a behind-the-scenes view of John Dalbank, and it's to give you a feel for what we do in the range of roles that is involved in running the John Dalbank Centre for Astrophysics and John Dalbank Observatory. So, Tim, I'm sure the listeners know you quite well. Can you please describe your role of what you do here at John Dalbank?
Well, officially, my title is I'm an Associate Director of John Dalbank Observatory, which sounds fancy, doesn't it? Anyway, it's, what the job is I'm an academic member of staff. So that basically means I'm in the physics department, so the School of Physics and Astronomy, to give it its full title in the University of Manchester, which means I've got the sort of usual research and teaching duties and admin duties that any member of staff would have. So I, for example, I teach our first-year undergraduate physics students the core course on astrophysics. In fact, unluckily for them, some might say that I'm the first lecturer they ever meet at university at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, which is, painful. But no, they're very much enjoy, and I certainly very, very much enjoy teaching that course. So that's probably my main teaching duty. But on the research side, I actually tend to work on novi. So these are the original novi. So it comes from a Latin word nova, meaning new. So it was sort of nova stella, new stars. And obviously, when they were first discovered, people sort of spotted this new bright star in the sky. They thought it was a new star being born. We now know that basically old stars dying. So this stems, these things, novae, actually stem from before we even knew of the existence of things called supernovae, which were really only identified in the sort of early part of the 20th century. So novae, as we understand them these days, are actually binary star systems. So there's two stars going around one another. One of them can be either, typically it'd be a red giant, or most often, to be honest, a main sequence star, main sequence dwarf, usually a little bit less massive than the sun, in a very close binary orbit, in the case of the main sequence stars, with another star. And in the case of novae, that second star is a white dwarf. So it's the core of a star like the sun, which has run out of nuclear fuel at the end of its life, expanded to become a red giant, lost all its outer layers, and left behind this white dwarf, a dead star about the size of the Earth. So you've got basically two stars in close binary orbit. The white dwarf basically pulls matter over from the other star. It builds up on the surface of the white dwarf. The pressure builds up, the temperature builds up, and eventually you start thermonuclear reactions in that material. You convert hydrogen into helium explosively. You get a big bang. It chucks all this stuff off into space, gets very bright. If they're close enough, you will see them as a new star in the night sky. Usually they're a bit farther away than that. So you still need a telescope to see them. And we study them with lots of different telescopes all the way across the spectrum. So I use radio telescopes, including the ones here at Jodrell, and the emailing network spread across the country, the European VLBI network, very occasionally, spread across Europe, but also telescopes at other wavelengths. So, for example, optical telescopes like the VLT in Chile, X-ray spacecraft like the SWIFT satellite in particular has been very useful to us for studying these things. And we're interested in particular in how the material is ejected in the explosion, whether it's in the form of jets, for example, and what's happened to the white dwarf after the explosion. So in some of these cases, we think the white dwarf might be growing in mass, because what happens is over a few thousand years, all the stuff sort of accretes onto the surface of this white dwarf, then you get a bang and blown off into space, and then you might not see... You actually don't destroy the white dwarf. The white dwarf sits there, just starts accreting again. So in principle, a few thousand years later, you get another bang when it's built up enough material. For some of them, that period between bangs is on an observable timescale, so maybe 10 years for the shortest ones. So we do get the chance to occasionally see one explode again. And for those ones, it's possible that not all the stuff it gathers from the other star is blasted off into space. So the white dwarf's actually increasing in mass. So every all the time it's gradually getting heavier and heavier. And if those are anywhere near the sort of mass limit for a white dwarf, which is the upper limit on its mass, which is about 1.4 solar masses, the Chandrasekhar mass, then that white dwarf, when it reaches that mass limit, will collapse under its own weight. It overcomes what's called electron degeneracy pressure, collapses in, gets starts nuclear reactions in the middle of the star, and it rips itself apart. And you get a titanic bang called a type 1A supernova, or a type 1 supernova in the sense of a white dwarf explosion. So that's sort of what I do, using different sorts of telescopes and try to understand them with models.
Now, in your other role, you're involved in a lot of outreach, and we may be expecting to see you on the TV very soon this month. Hmm. So can you tell us a bit of your role in outreach?
Yeah. Well, my sort of this associate director role that I have is formally associated with public engagement and communications. So that means sort of external relations in terms of working with the public and schools and so on, and about telling them about the astronomy we do, promoting the astronomy, explaining what we do with taxpayers' money, I suppose, in terms of our research. But in particular, probably the most important thing is inspiring people. So inspiring young people in particular to think about becoming scientists and engineers of the future. So, one of the things that's been occupying my mind most recently, most of my time, is the BBC Stargazing Live programmes, which were first broadcast from Jodrell in January of 2011. So I'm basically the lead person at Jodrell on that programme and responsible for coordinating all the operations that happen there. So it's a massive job, and we're looking forward this month to the second series of Stargazing Live, which is the 16th, 17th and 18th of January. They've actually expanded the programme to be 3 1.5-hour programmes this time. But also there's many more other programmes that are sort of also doing their own stargazing bits. So for example, Blue Peter are having a special stargazing programme, which is going to be partly filmed at Jodrell Bank. We've also got an evening programme on Radio 5 Live that's being broadcast from Jodrell Bank as well. So there's a lot going on. So it's quite hard to manage from my perspective, but great fun as well, and certainly great for Jodrell Bank. I should say, of course, that they're presented by the famous Brian Cox, who's one of our colleagues in the particle physics group here in Manchester, but also Dara O'Brien, the comedian. And Mark Thompson, the One Show's astronomer, is also there on hand. He'll have representatives of various local astronomical societies out at Jodrell with telescopes, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed for clear skies. But you know, you have to be a bit zen about it. So we'll see. We've got plenty to do if it's cloudy. And the basic format of the show is that you've got, you know, little video segments about different aspects of astronomy. And in the three programmes this time, the main themes are the moon, the galaxy, and the search for life and finding planets around other stars. So there's some very interesting guests. There's a live link to the USA to speak to the last man to walk on the moon. Gene Cernan will be part of the first programme. Other people that you might not immediately associate with astronomy, like John Coleshaw, the impressionist, will be part of the shows as well. So it should all be good fun and hopefully informative as well. So we're definitely all looking forward to it.
I'm sure everyone is. It was pretty cool last year, so I hope it's the same this year. Other stuff you've been doing includes Jodrell Bank Live, a rock concert, which you wouldn't normally assume to happen at a telescope. Can you tell us about that? Some people may know you had a science chant going on in the crowd with that. I don't think I've ever heard about 5,000 people chanting science before, but it was, Tim got them to do it all. So
it was a surprise to me as well, I have to say. We decided we're sort of interested in sort of getting new audiences interested in astronomy. So, you know, there's obviously, we do a lot of work with schools, with the general public, with amateur societies and so on. So that's sort of the bread and butter, if you like, of what we do. But you'll find that there are certain groups of people who just won't be paying any attention. They're interested in other things. And some of the things that, you know, I get involved with a lot of work with artists and writers. So I've done various art exhibits and music pieces and so on, just to basically, you know, reach out to people who otherwise wouldn't notice what we were up to. And in this case, what we wanted to do was get a certain group of people interested, which is sort of people in the, I guess, 20s to 40s or so, I suppose, that sort of age range, where at the moment, for the Discovery Centre at Jodrell, we mostly get family groups. But if you want people who aren't necessarily going to be bringing families, rock festivals is probably one way to go. So we decided, let's have our first inaugural rock festival at Jodrell, which happened in July of 2011, live from Jodrell Bank, and the headline act with the Flaming Lips. And yeah, alongside the music, we had people like yourself and others from here at Jodrell Bank sort of coming to Jodrell to give little talks for the public. So we had talks with people before the music started. We had little science experiments that they could get involved with. And then, I actually got sort of bizarrely got to go on stage in between the bands and ahead of the headline act in front of 5,000 people. I was fully expecting to be bottled off, but it didn't happen. And yeah, the science chant was born. So the clapping along to Pulsars was pretty good fun as well. So so that was great. It was really, really successful. And I think everybody really loved it. And we're definitely going to be doing that again. And right as of this minute, sort of unfortunately, I cannot reveal live on the Jogcast who the headline act are going to be. But look, dates in your diary, 23rd, 24th of June, that weekend is going to be the next Jodrell Bank live festival. We are not quite signed up with the band that we want to headline that, but you'll have heard of them, and it should be great fun, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for nice weather for that as well.
I'm definitely looking forward to the next live at Jodrell Bank. Thanks for that, Tim, and telling us your role as both a lecturer, a researcher, and as outreach. Cheers.